Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve!
I hold before you a deck of cards. Some of you may be excited because you think I'm going to do a magic trick for you, and maybe I could, but I'm not going to. These cards were actually a big deal in my house growing up because my father was a professional gambler, mostly a professional poker player, and so this is kind of how we made our money. We lived on the East Coast, but my dad would spend most of his time here in Vegas, and he would kind of leave my sister and I and my mom back on the East Coast and fly out here, and sometimes he would be gone for a long time, and he would leave us with some money, and there were times where he lost, and we would just kind of wait for him to come back, and finally we would make kind of our last drive to the grocery store because we had like a little bit of gas left and a little bit of money, and my mom would buy like 10 boxes of spaghetti and 20 cans of tuna fish and a loaf of bread, and that would be our food for the next weeks until he came home. That's what we would eat every meal. Now, there are other times where he would come home and he had won big. I can remember a couple of times where he came home and we got a ride to the Jaguar dealership the next day and bought a Jaguar or two in cash and drove home, or he came home and said, "We're going to Disney World," and we would go for a week or two. Kind of infrequent. In fact, someone has done some odds on this, a mathematician, on what are your odds of getting rich gambling? What are your odds of like making millions off of gambling? And what they've determined is that a person is 121 times more likely to be struck and killed by lightning than to win millions of dollars gambling. And so if you get struck and killed by lightning 120 times, then you can start getting excited about your opportunities and your possibilities gambling, because you are now just as likely to win millions in gambling as you are to be struck and killed by lightning again. That is actually mathematically accurate. I grew up in a family where gambling paid our bills and made us poor. Did any of you maybe grow up in a home where you were taught not to gamble? Any of you have parents or grandparents that taught you? Yes, some of you that taught you, you know, it's not what you should do, and maybe don't even play cards. Maybe the allure of gambling might be too much. Well, some of you might be surprised today, because some of you might say, you know what, I've never gambled in my life. I've never played a game of poker, never put money on a roulette wheel, never played the lottery. But what I want to talk to you about today is the great gamble, and it's not a wager that I'm going to suggest you don't take, and it's not a wager I'm going to suggest you do take. It's a wager that you're already taking. In fact, you make this bet every single day of your lives. Because you bet your life. But it may not be what you think. I'm going to express one of the two options in how you can make this wager with this towel and bucket. If you have a Bible, open to John chapter 13. If you don't have a Bible, you're fine. We'll put the verse on the screen. But if you have a Bible, you can open to John chapter 13, where we're going to see this scene with Jesus and his 12 disciples, his 12 guys who had committed their lives to following him and apprenticing under him. And we're going to see this scene where it's a dinner party. And it's interesting, back in Jesus' time, transportation was different. They didn't take cars or buses. People walked. And there were dirt roads, and the dirt roads were usually dusty and sometimes muddy, and people wore sandals. So as you walked, your feet would just become covered in dust and dirt and mud and maybe some animal droppings that had been on the road. And so your feet would be filthy. And so there was a custom back then that when you came into somebody's house, they would always provide a person, might be a servant, might be a slave, it might be the youngest child, to wash your feet. It was kind of necessary. And so they would get out a bucket and a towel and some water, and they would wash your feet in the bucket, and then they would dry your feet. And it was especially necessary if you were coming over for a dinner party. Because back then, they didn't sit around a table for dinner. They would actually lay around a table for dinner, which I am all in favor of, like, inventing that practice. Because that sounds really comfy to me. But they would actually do that. They would lay on the floor or on some pillows or on some couch kind of things, and they would just lay end to end to end. And so your feet would be in somebody else's face as you ate. And so it's really important to have a foot washer for a meal. Well, in this story we're going to see, Jesus and his 12 followers, his disciples, go to this home, and they go for a dinner, and everything's been arranged, except there's no foot washer. Apparently somebody forgot that detail, and we're made to believe, reading the story, that the lack of a foot washer must have created some tension. Because the only people there are Jesus and his 12 followers, and they realize that the job of the foot washer is for the person who is the lowest on the totem pole, the person with the least amount of prestige or power. And so Jesus' 12 followers, they're like, there's no way I'm going to do it, because it would be tantamount to saying that I'm the lowest of the group, right? There's no way. And so they start giving each other looks, I bet. It kind of looks like, I'm not going to do it. You need to do it. And this guy's like, I'm not going to do it. You do it. And this guy's like, I was chosen by Jesus to be a follower before you. You do it. And the other guy was like, I spent more time with him. You do it. And so they're all kind of giving each other these looks. And no one is willing to just get down on their knees and wash everyone's feet. Well, finally, time for the meal comes, and they all kind of lay down to eat. And we actually read in chapter 13 of John, verse 2, it says, the evening meal was in progress. Okay, so food has been served. People started to eat. And then in verse 4, it says, so he, Jesus, got up from the meal. So apparently, these guys were so determined not to lower themselves that they were like, you know what? I would rather lay there for 3 hours with your dirty, filthy, smelly feet in my face than have to wash them. And so everyone just laid down with their gross feet. Okay? And Jesus is watching this whole little mini drama take place. He's watching the looks that they're giving each other and this whole scenario play out. And then after the dinner is already in progress, Jesus got up from his position, his reclined position at the table. And let's look what happens next. Starting in verse 4, it says this. So he got up from the meal, that's Jesus, took off his outer clothing and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with a towel that was wrapped around him. Can you imagine how quiet the room got? As they're all passing food and talking, all of a sudden, Jesus gets up, and he takes off his outer clothes. He puts on a kind of an apron. He gets out a towel and a bucket and some water, and everyone realizes what's going to happen. They realize that Jesus is taking the role of the servant, the slave. I doubt people continue to go, hey, pass the salt. Can I have the bread? I think it probably got deathly quiet. They're all kind of looking at each other like, I can't believe what is happening here. And I can just imagine how they felt when Jesus came to their feet. You know, when Jesus takes your feet and starts washing them, and just how shameful or embarrassing that must have been for them, that he was demonstrating a willingness to do for them what they were just too proud to do for each other. Well, Jesus goes from one to the next, and he washes everyone's feet, and then when he's done, he's got this filthy towel and this bucket of muddy water, and he speaks, starting in verse 12. It says, when he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. Do you understand what I have done for you? He asked them. You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. Now, I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. Very truly, I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. And so Jesus, unapologetically and with no ambiguity whatsoever, calls every one of his followers in that room and to us today to live lives of foot washing. Now, he's not calling us to literally wash feet, because that's no longer necessary, but he is calling us to live the life of a servant. He's like, I want that to be a distinctive characteristic of those who bear my name. People who call me Lord and teacher, people who follow me, need to take on, you know, the apron and grab a bucket and a towel, and they need to become servants. In the words of this series, Jesus is saying, I want you to live beyond yourselves. I want you to live bigger lives than lives that are just self-focused and self-obsessed. You know, I want you to look beyond your own concerns, your own needs and desires, so that you can serve the needs of others. He's like, I'm calling you to simple acts of service and kindness, like foot washing, like opening the door for other people, like letting someone in front of you in traffic, like sharing the remote control at home for a change, like spending some of your money on someone or something other than yourself, like offering to help out around the house or around the office, around school, even if it's not your responsibility, to acts of service that are uncharacteristic of almost anyone else and unexpected by everyone else. Jesus' fundamental point was, listen, if you're a follower of mine, the life I am calling you to, what it really looks like and means to follow me is to do practical, servant-oriented things for other people. I think that's what Jesus meant in verse 14 when he said, again, he says, now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. Right? He's like, listen, if you call me Lord, if I'm the boss of your life, if you call me teacher, if I'm the one you look to for how to live your life, then listen, the life I'm leading you to is a life of serving. It needs to become who you are. Like you just look for chances to wash feet everywhere you can. You walk into every room wondering, how can I serve the people who are here? I love how this story is prefaced. In the first verse, in the second half, it says, having loved his own who were in the world, he now showed them the full extent of his love. It's like, why did Jesus wash their feet? Why did he do this? Well, partly because it's who he was. I mean, if you read through the life of Jesus, you're like, that's Jesus. But it's also because he wanted to show these guys how much he loved them. He wanted to show them the full extent of his love. And the way he did that was washing their feet. Washing feet, serving, is all about love. You know, we say that verb is all about loving God and loving people. And washing feet, or serving other people, it's all about loving God and loving people. I love how this story is prefaced. I also love how it ends. The last verse again, Jesus says, now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. And this is the verse I really want you to kind of focus in on today. If you have a Bible and a pen, maybe underline, you will be blessed. He says, now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. That is quite a statement. So Jesus says, listen, I'm calling you to a life of foot washing, to do acts of kindness and serving for other people. And if you do this, you will be blessed. What does that mean? What does it mean to be blessed? You know, you hear that word surprisingly kind of a lot today. You'll hear it on TV. You'll hear people talking, and they'll say, oh, man, I just feel blessed. Or they'll say, oh, God bless you. And I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure people are using the word wrong. I think that what people mean when they say, yeah, I just feel blessed, is they feel like, it's kind of like they're saying, God did something nice for me. I just feel like God came through for me. I feel like God kind of did me a favor. Or if people say, God bless you, you know, man, God bless you. I think what they're meaning is, man, I hope God comes through for you. I hope God does something nice for you. I hope God does you a favor. That's not what the word means. If you want to use it that way, keep going. I'm not going to like patrol and say anything to you. But that's actually not what the word means. And so in the Bible, here's what it means. Now, sometimes you'll hear like somebody who knows the Bible and is a little bit of a scholar say, the word blessed actually means happy. And it does. That is kind of what it means. It denotes like a happiness or to be happy. But it's much deeper than that. The word blessed in the Bible, the meaning, it's kind of like to have God pour his life out on you. It's kind of like this guy goes, and he pours his life on you. That's what blessed actually means, to be blessed by God. It's like, man, God just poured his life out of me. And the word carries in the Bible kind of this, this idea of this distinctive, pervasive, unusual joy. It kind of gets more to like this joy. So Jesus in John chapter 10, verse 10 said, I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. He says, the reason I came to earth, part of the reason is I want to give you full, abundant life. I want to give you a quality of life, a kind of life that you can't have apart from me coming for you and bringing this to you. That's kind of the idea of blessed. It's this full, abundant, joyful life that you can't get apart from God. That's what blessed actually means. And so what Jesus is teaching us, let's make sure we get this, in this passage is, if you want to be blessed, if you want God to pour his life out on you, if you want to be happy, if you want to have real joy, the way to do it is pick up a towel and a bucket. It's through serving other people. Now that is obviously the exact opposite of what we've learned our entire lives, right? Like in our culture, we are told the exact opposite of that. What we've been taught every day of our lives is, man, you need to look out for yourself, right? We need to look out for our number one. We need to serve ourselves. The greatest possible joy is through us getting as much as we can for ourselves, you know, as many great experiences and much great stuff, right? It's like the world would say, the faster car you have, the happier you'll be. The bigger house you have, the happier you'll be. The nicer clothes you have, the happier you'll be. The larger your bank account, the happier you'll be. Whoever dies with the most toys wins, right? The world would say, hey, listen, if you want to have a great night, you want to have a really great night, well then eat food that you like to eat, right? Pick a movie that you want to see and hang out with people who you enjoy hanging out with. Serve yourself. The whole night should be pointed at you, and that's how you'll be happy. That's how we achieve a fulfilled, joyful, abundant life. And here's Jesus saying, no, you've got it completely wrong. The way you find and achieve a full life, an abundant life, a joyful life, is not through serving yourself, but through serving others. He says the path that leads to the greatest happiness is through serving others, to look out for everyone else, to give away as much as you can. It's almost like the slower car you have, the happier you'll be. The smaller house you have, the happier you'll be. The worse clothes you have, the happier you'll be. The smaller your bank account is, the happier you'll be. Whoever dies with the least toys wins. At Verve, we're just starting. I'm so excited. We're just starting to do mission trips. We've got two mission teams that are going to go out this year to Ecuador and Poland and try to make a difference and serve in other places in the world where our church is involved. And now I'm excited. Part of the reason I'm excited is before starting Verve, I was a pastor of a church in Virginia Beach, Virginia, and we would have 80 to 100 people go on mission trips every year, right? For 10, 11, 12 years in a row that I was there, 80 to 100 people went out every single year. And when they came back, I'd be at the airport to like greet them, or I would talk to them in the lobby, or I'd go out for coffee with them, and I'd be like, tell me about your trip, man. And the thing I heard all the time, like almost without any exception of those, you know, 1,000 people-ish, would be, greatest week of my entire life. Vince, it was the greatest week of my entire life. Man, I'll never forget it. Best experience I've ever had. And then I would say, why? Like, tell me. And it was interesting because their answers would always focus on there. It would always focus on where they were. Like, they thought there was something magic about where they were. They would say things like, man, God's really doing something in Laos. Like, God's really moving there. It's incredible there. Or they'd say, Vince, Vietnam's beautiful. Like, it's just, I don't know, it's just amazing there. Or they'd say, Vince, man, I knew that going to Haiti would be hard, but I'll tell you, if I lived there, my life could be so simple. It could be so uncomplicated. I know I would be so close to God all the time if I only lived there. They always focused on what was happening there. But what they didn't seem to understand is that it wasn't about where they were. It was about what they were doing. For 1 week of their life, 24/7, 7 days in a row, all they did was wash feet. They went, not literally, but all they did was serve. Their whole entire life was just consumed with serving other people. That's the purpose of the trip. For 1 week, they never thought about getting a faster car or a bigger house or nicer clothes or more money in their bank account. You know what? They didn't get to choose what they ate for dinner. They ate whatever was put in front of them. And it's often gross. They didn't get to choose their entertainment for the evening. They didn't get any entertainment any evening. They didn't get to choose who they hang out. They didn't get to like, hey, I'm going to hang out with my fun friends. No, they hung out with poor people who they wouldn't even give a second glance to back at home. And that was the best week of their entire life. Yep, it was. And it's not because of where they were. It's because of what they were doing. It's because Jesus told the truth. We are blessed when we serve. God pours his life out on us. We find real joy when we point our life outwards and we serve other people. God's life, the full abundant life, is poured out on people who pick up a bucket and a towel and meet the needs of other people instead of themselves. And this is the great gamble. This is the great gamble. This is the wager, not that I'm telling you not to take, not that I'm suggesting you do take. It's the wager you're already taking. You make this bet every single day of your life. See, we bet not on only what's going to give us eternal life, that's true too, but we also bet every single day on what is going to give me the life I'm looking for here and now. Today, what is going to make me happy? What is going to fulfill me? You bet your life. And really, there are two options for this wager. You can bet on serving yourself. Now I'm going to get all I can for me. Or you can bet on serving other people. I'm going to do all I can for them. Jesus framed this whole wager up pretty well in Mark chapter 8. We'll put the verses on the screen for you. In verses 34 and 35, here's how he said it. It says, then he called the crowd to him along with his disciples and said, whoever wants to be my disciple, which just means follower or learner, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. Check this out. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it. But whoever loses their life for me and for the gospel will save it. Let's look at that again. So the gospel means the good news. And so whoever is willing to lose their life for me, for Jesus and for God and for helping people to know God's love and God's offer. So he says, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life, people who are just like, man, I need to find life, and they're going after for themselves, will lose it. But whoever loses their life for me and for the gospel will save it. So Jesus says the path of serving others, what he calls here taking up your cross, which means a willingness to die to yourself is what it means to take up your cross. Or the way he puts it, losing your life for him. If you're willing to serve others by losing your life for him, giving and doing everything you can for others, he said that path, taking that path, will lead you to real life. You'll think that you're giving up your life, but surprise, that's how you find real life. There's a twist. But he says, listen, if instead you claw for life, you try to get everything you can for you and you serve yourself and you look out for number one and you try to die with the most toys, surprise, you're going to lose your life. You're not going to ever have the joy that you're seeking because that's not the path to it. There's a great example in the Bible of a guy who experienced just that. It's a guy named Solomon. Solomon was a king and man, he was a guy who said, I'm going to try to get everything I can for me. And so he pointed his life at himself, and he lived for himself, and he got like all the possessions he could want and all the women he could want. He got everything he could want, and he wrote a journal. And so he just was kind of continuously recording his thoughts and about his experiences. And so here's what he wrote about living for yourself and getting everything you could possibly want. He wrote, Ecclesiastes 2:11, yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless. Chasing after the wind, nothing was gained under the sun. And here's a guy who had it all. And what he realized was everything is nothing. It's nothing. And you might think, well, okay, but I mean, it's kind of a long time ago. You know, it was like thousands of years ago. I mean, even though he had everything, he didn't have a car. They didn't have a car. Maybe it's because he lived so long ago. But man, it's amazing to me how today in our world, people who get the things that we wish we could have. You know, the faster car and the bigger house and the more money and all that. People who get those things are miserable. Have you noticed? The people who have it all are miserable. People who get incredible fame or popularity, people who get fortune, people who win gold medals in the Olympics, people who achieve it all are miserable. I have a hobby. I collect quotes from people who got it all and are miserable. It's kind of morbid. But I actually have this file in my computer with dozens of quotes of people who are interviewed who you'd be like, man, if I could only have what they have, then I'd be happy. And this person's like, oh no, it's miserable. I'm miserable. And so I got dozens of them. You should hang out with me sometime. I'm a lot of fun. Madonna was once asked, are you a happy person? You think, man, she's hit it. Her dreams from childhood. I want to be a platinum recording artist. I want to tour the world. She got everything she wanted. Are you a happy person? She replied, I'm a tormented person, but I want to be happy. Another singer, Kurt Cobain, was rich, successful. Everything he dreamed about, he got. And he wrote in his suicide note, I must be one of those narcissists who only appreciate things when they're alone. I'm too sensitive. I haven't felt the excitement for too many years. Now, it's like, I got everything, and it turned out to be nothing, and I'm miserable. All people who bet their lives, and they just put all the chips in on, I'm going to serve myself, and I'm going to save my life, and what they realize is that Jesus told the truth. That's how you lose your life. They got to the end of that path, the end of the path that we wish we could get to, and they said, oh, There's no life to be found here. You bet your life. Every one of us does. If you gamble on serving yourself, what you'll discover is that path actually leads away from real life, despite what we're told every day in commercials and on TV and from everywhere else. If you instead gamble on serving others, if you say, I'm going to live my life for the sake of other people, I'm not going to look out for number one, I'm going to look out for everybody but number one. Now, what you'll find is that path leads to real life. There's a great verse in the Bible, James chapter 4, verse 10. We'll put it on the screen. But it says, humble yourselves before the Lord, and he will lift you up. Do you see the paradox there? To humble yourself means like to lower yourself, right? Humbling yourself means I'm not important, okay? I'm not trying to climb my way up. I'm just going to lower myself. I'm going to get down my knees. I'm going to grab a bucket and a towel on. I'm going to wash feet. I'm going to humble myself, okay? The verse says, if you take steps down, God lifts you up, okay? The path to life is to lower yourself, and then God is the one who will raise you up, and he will pour his life out on you. I'll tell you, man, I've been trying to live this life for like 22 years now, something like that, and it is completely unnatural to me, just like it is, I would assume, to you, right? Because every natural instinct I have and everything I've learned and everything I hear is serve yourself, live for yourself, get everything you can for yourself, do what's best for you, right? Just like you, and so it's really hard, but what's interesting is now looking back at these last 22 years or so, there have been a few times where I actually chose the life that Jesus offered me. There have been a few like glimmering good moments in my life, and I've got bad ones, but there have been a few good ones where I'm like, I did it, okay? I chose to serve other people instead of myself. So when I became a Christian, it was my end of my sophomore year of college, and I was planning on going to law school. But when I became a Christian, like, I can't explain it, but everything in me said, I think I should be one of those, like, pastor people, which is funny because I had never been to church in my life, not one single time. But I was like, I want to be, like, I just want, like, to my job to be every day, all I'm trying to do is, like, help people know Jesus, because no one had ever told me about Jesus. And now that I knew about him, I was like, why did no one tell me? I want to tell everybody. And so I'm like, I think I should be, like, a pastor person whose whole job is just to do this. But I was planning on going to law school, and I went to law school. And I actually got a full scholarship to a good law school. And after my first year, I loved law school. I did well at it. But I still had this thing inside me. I was like, this is not what I'm supposed to do with my life. I am supposed to go and be one of those pastor people and help people know about Jesus and just do that all the time. And so I had this choice. On one side, I was going to law school for free. I was going to graduate with like almost no student loans. And I had the promise of a salary of $80,000 to $100,000 when I graduated. On this side, I could go to seminary. I would have to pay full tuition, no scholarship, no nothing. I would graduate with tens of thousands of school loans and a promise of a salary of $20,000 to $25,000 when I graduate. And everything in me said to go to stay in law school and become a lawyer. And I chose seminary. And I went to seminary, and when I got done, I got an internship at this church. It was, at the time and still today, I think the third largest church in America. At the time, I had like 12,000 people. And at the end of my internship, a one-year internship, they offered me a job. And it was like wow, like this is a really prestigious job for your first job. And the salary was way more than I would have thought I could make like as a beginner. And all kinds of benefits and everything. And I had another offer. The other offer was for this church just outside of Washington, D.C. It was a two-year-old church with 80 people. They'd never gotten past 80 people. They had a pastor, but they're like, man, if we had a second pastor, we could really do something. And they said, we really want you to come. And they said, here's what your salary will be. It was $12,000 less than the salary at the other church. But then they said, we actually can't afford to pay you anything. So that's what your salary would be, but you'd have to go out and get it. Like, you'd have to ask your friends to pay your salary and find some people who are willing to, like, send you money every month to pay your salary. And so I was like, well, if I have to raise my own salary, why are you telling me how much it should be? I think my salary would be $1 million. No, I didn't say that. But I was like, so I can have, you know, no salary and try to make $12,000 less than that place, church of 80, or I can have a good salary and benefits at a church of $12,000. But I just felt like I could do more good for God, that little church of 80. And so I chose that church, and it just started to grow really fast. And after 2 years there, we were like 400 or 500 people. And the church came to me and said, hey, we can pay your salary now. Like, we've got enough offerings, and so we can pay your salary. But I had this opportunity to go to Virginia Beach and start a new church. 8 out of every 10 new churches that get started die within 3 years. And so it's like you have almost no chance when you start a church of it succeeding. And I knew that. And I'd have to raise my own salary again and start with 4 people in a living room. But I just thought, man, I could do more good for people with that. And so I chose Virginia Beach, and I was there for 12 years. And, man, it just did really well. Hundreds of people and just lives changed. And we loved it, and we wanted to stay there forever. But then we had this opportunity to come to Las Vegas and start a church. And it's like, we're going to start again in a living room with 4 people and have to raise our salary again and have no salary at the beginning. And we chose to do it because we wanted to launch Verve, and we thought we could do more for other people. And I'll tell you this, man, I have had so many times where I bet on serving myself. But I've had these few moments where God helped me to make the right choice and follow Jesus' teaching and bet on serving others instead of myself. And I am so glad I did. I mean, looking back at my life and those decisions and those kind of crossroads in my journey and the path it's led me on, it's like, man, God has lifted me up because of those choices. And the Bible is true. When you humble yourself, when you take the path that isn't about you and for others, God really lifts you up. And whether you realize it or not, you are betting your life. You bet your life yesterday. You bet your life on Friday. You bet your life every single day. Are you going to live for yourself? Or are you going to live for other people? Listen, if you choose to bet on yourself, I'm going to try to do what makes me happy. I'm going to pick what I do each night of the week and what I do with my money and what I do for me. Then the chances of you ending up happy and joyful and blessed are 121 times less likely than you winning millions in gambling, which is 121 times less likely than you being struck and killed by lightning. That's mathematically accurate. No, it's not. I just completely made that up. But I'll tell you this, that path, if you choose, I'm gonna live my life for me. I'm gonna spend my money on me. I'm gonna serve me. I'm gonna try to get things for me. It is not a path that ends in happiness. That is not a path that leads to joy. But if you choose to lose your life and serve other people, and it will be so counterintuitive and so countercultural, and you will feel like, what are we doing? What am I doing? And you're going to find that Jesus comes through on his word. Surprise! That's how you find life. maybe you're not sure. Maybe the thoughts going through your mind right now are, Vince, I hear you. I hear what Jesus is saying. I hear the Bible. But man, like, my entire life has, I have been taught and it's all been about me. I don't like to think that way, but if I'm just being honest, my life is about me. I spend my money on me. I spend my time on me. I make my choices based on what's best for me. You just can't convince me in 30 minutes that everything I've done is wrong and I need to completely change the direction of my life. Like, I just don't know if in 30 minutes I can be changed like that. Okay, that's fair, and I understand that. So here's a little challenge for you, okay? What if you did an experiment? What if you did an experiment to find out if what Jesus said was actually true? And so what if you did, let's say a six-month experiment, that for 6 months, instead of living like we typically do, which is kind of hedging our bets, right, if we're honest, what we typically do is my life is about me, but I serve a little bit. My life is about me, but I'll give away a little bit of money. My life is about me, but every once in a while I'll find some way to do something nice for everybody else. And so it's about me, but I hedge my bet a little bit. Instead of doing that, what if for 6 months you went all in? Okay, one way or the other, just to find out if Jesus was telling the truth or if he was lying. Okay, so for 6 months, what if you just, with reckless abandon, followed Jesus and his teaching? You decide for the next 6 months, just as an experiment, and then you can go back to whatever you want. For 6 months, I'm going to live the life of a servant. I'm going to live the life of a foot washer. I am going to, for 6 months only, take every opportunity I can find to serve. Every opportunity, even if it seems like something very insignificant. I'm going to open the door for other people every chance I have. I'm going to choose the back seat of the car so my friend can sit in the front. I'm going to take out the garbage, even if it's not my responsibility. I'm going to stack the chairs after the meeting. I'm going to clean the bathroom at the office, even though somebody gets paid to do that. I'm going to do it. I'm going to volunteer here at Verve. I'm going to give some of my money away. I'm going to grab a towel and a bucket and serve every single chance I have. And the whole time, as you're doing that for those 6 months, and especially when you get to the end of your experiment and you look back, ask yourself this question: did I gain or did I lose? Did my life become smaller or bigger? Do I have more joy? Do I like where that path took me for 6 months? What if you tried that for 6 months? Or, and what I'm about to say, you'll never hear in another church in your entire life, I promise you that. And I prefer you not to quote me because I'm going to sound really bad if you just quote this part of this message, okay? Or make the opposite bet. Instead of hedging your bets, take all your chips and push them all in on serving yourself. For the next 6 months, make yourself the center of the universe. Seriously. Like, just see, what does that do? I mean, just be demanding at every chance you have. Be the most demanding person in the world. You know, ask everyone to just have their worlds revolve around you, okay? Push yourself to the front of every line. Get everything you can for you. Disappear when it's time for the dirty work, right? When there's work to be done. Where'd he go? I don't know. He always disappeared, right? Be that person. Just for 6 months, point everything at you, serve yourself. And while you're taking that path, and especially at the end of the 6 months, ask yourself, do I like where that took me? Do I feel closer to God? Is my life more full now or more empty? Is my life bigger or smaller? Do I feel fulfilled because I've gotten everything I can for me? Or do I feel really frustrated? Have I experienced real joy on that path? Has it given me real life? Listen, you bet your life. Every day you're betting your life. So why not really go for it? Find out which is the right way to live. You got lots of years left. Do a six-month experiment to figure out how should you live for the rest of your life. Don't hedge your bet. Choose one side or the other and absolutely go for it. And you will find out if Jesus told the truth. Let's pray. God, I don't know. I think we all like the idea of serving. I think when we hear this, oh, yeah, we should serve and we should do nice things for other people and find some ways of serving the world, we like the idea of it, but when it really comes down to it, there's something just so counterintuitive There's something so countercultural. There's something that just inside of us that fights against this idea of really living for other people. There's something about it, I think, that scares us of, well, if I'm always looking out for other people, who's going to look out for me? The answer, by the way, is you would, God. there's something inside of us that just feels like, I just think that I would end up this doormat, this loser, that I've lost my life. But God, I have experienced that you have told the truth. That there's this paradox that when we lose our life and we look to serve other people and stop caring about ourselves, that's when we experience real life and real joy. Man, every time I've made that decision, I'm so glad I did. And when I look back at times when I've chosen to serve myself, man, I just am filled with regrets and I see that it led me to a smaller life. God, I pray that every person in this room would choose in a reckless way to abandon their lives to your care and your control and your plan and just serve other people. And if some of us aren't ready to make that decision for our lives, God, I pray that we'll just try it for 6 months, because I'm confident that we'll find that you spoke the truth, that we will be blessed if we do this. We pray in the name of the one who came and got down on his knees with a towel and a bucket and washed feet. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.